there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Volume.
No! Oh my God! How could he do that?
Are you on
drugs?
What?
Charles Darwin.
The nerds is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brever, and alongside me is Logan Camden, and we are back, baby. Nobody can stop us from going live post-game, no matter how much you want to, because the basketball is just too good, and we got to talk about it. Another fun day of action tonight, and we're going to start by talking about the matchup that closed the night. Very big game two between the Mavs and Clippers. Super highly anticipated series. Obviously, the Clippers didn't just take game one without Kawhi. They blew the Mavs off the floor. It was a 30-point game at the half. Just a humiliating performance for Dallas. But they bounce back, take one on the road here with Kawhi back out there. Logan, what was your biggest takeaway from this win for Dallas?
Their offense was just better down the stretch, you know, and I think these are two very evenly, talented and skill-wise teams. I think they're very balanced, and I thought the effort and energy we got from both sides was really even. You know, the Mavs came out really flat in game one. If that was Luka, if it was Kyrie, I know Kyrie has the, you know, big third quarter and the big second half, but they come out flat. They're getting bodied on the glass. They're getting killed by Harden. The energy and the effort and the engagement was just there for Dallas tonight, but the crucial stretch was the fourth quarter when this game is coming down to it. The Mavs go on a 17-3 run down the stretch, and shout out to Luka, man. Carson, I don't know if there's a more demoralizing shot in basketball than a Luka step back three, man. That just pops your bubble if you're the other team. It just leaves you with this, what do I do? What? How am I supposed to defend this shot, man? What am I supposed to do against Luka? And he hits two of those. The big guy I want to give some love to, PJ Washington. Great defense all night, and I was disappointed, man. Me and my roommate were yelling at the TV in the third quarter and the second quarter, like, PJ, what are you doing, man? Clanging shots, making bad decisions, missing easy looks. But in the fourth quarter, two clutch threes. He attacks a closeout, gets a really crucial layup. Dallas desperately needs every single game for one of these role players to step up. You know, if it's Dante Exum, if it's Josh Green, if it's PJ, if it's Kleba, somebody's got to be the third option and the guy that steps up and goes above and beyond, especially in these big moments. And they needed PJ's contributions, and he showed up and did it tonight down the stretch, man, finished the game off strong. That, to me, was the big difference, Carson. There are some other keys that we'll get into here shortly, but the fourth quarter stretch, the Mavs just peel away. Offense comes a little easier to them, but you know, not really ready to make any big declarations despite, you know, the big Clippers game one win and, you know, a close Mavs game two win. I think this is going to be a really evenly matched series the rest of the way. The Mavs just were hotter and better in the fourth quarter of this one, man, and that's what really made the difference.
it's going to be a battle for sure. We're in for an awesome series here, but this fourth quarter is why you buy into the Mavs. It is having that sort of overwhelming star shot creation that you just think is going to guide you through a series, maybe multiple series, as long as you are good enough in the effort categories and as long as you're good enough defensively and you can hang physically in the front court enough. And in game one, Dallas just didn't hang in any of those categories. Like, their stars weren't good enough in the first half. Luka particularly just didn't have a very good game, but their spot-up shooters were also clanging. They were missing good looks around the rim. Defensively, they were constantly in rotation, and they just didn't bring great effort there. They got smacked in the mouth by Ivica Zubac and his size and physicality. So this was a very good response on those fronts, because this still wasn't like a super pretty offensive game from the Mavs. This was a tough game. This was kind of a slugfest. They pulled through on the back of that in the end. But what we've seen very clearly is teams are going to test the supporting cast, because in game one, LA really didn't throw many traps and blitzes at Luka and Kyrie. And maybe part of that was they pulled away so quickly in that first half. They still were willing to send help when necessary, obviously, and force the guys around them to knock down open spot up jumpers. But it was clearly a different tone from the start in this one. Early on, even just trapping to switch, which I think was a really intelligent play from Ty Lue, we saw how easily in game one, LA was able to hunt Luka Doncic on the defensive side of the floor. Whenever Dallas tried to do the same thing to him, whenever Kyrie had that matchup, it was just immediately, all right, who's the nearest defender? Kawhi, we're trapping a switch. We're trapping a switch. Norman Powell, all right, I guess we'll just outright trap here. Just like, we're not going to let Kyrie and Luka cook against our weak points defensively on the perimeter in single coverage. And in this second half, man, they were dialing up those traps. And that's what I said would be the best game plan for them going into this series. Just because Luka in particular is so overwhelmingly great that you want to get the ball out of his hands. And even though he's going to make the right decisions, although at a couple points they actually tripped him up legitimately with traps in this game, he's generally going to get the ball out to the right people, but then it's okay. Can they make the right decisions? Derek Lively from the middle of the floor. Do they just have good enough spot-up shooters? If it's PJ Washington and Derek Jones Jr. eating up a majority of those minutes, those are two spotty spot-up shooters. And if I can live with their corner threes as opposed to Luka just comfortably working against me in single coverage, I'll probably take that. And that was working for LA in this game. It allowed them to take the lead again in that third quarter. But then, like you said, I mean, that big Mavs run was a combination of the stars heating up and their special shot making, but also the supporting cast starting to deliver. And PJ Washington is so important for this team, dude. It is legitimately fascinating. Like, I am all in on just seeing where this PJ Washington roller coaster goes, because he's so important for them defensively and in terms of size. And he's been really good there taking on difficult matchups. His length is so impactful. And offensively, he's the dude who is never afraid to take shots. Derek Jones Jr. isn't always going to want to take those shots. Like, PJ will take 15 shots in a game if you let him. The game that I watched in person, them against the Warriors, he took 20 shots. He'll take those floaters if he has a 4-on-3. He'll cut to the rim, and he'll attempt those looks around the rim. And, of course, he will take those open spot-up threes, but he just doesn't always make them. But to keep shooting after he started 2-for-7 was legitimately very important. Kleba knocks down two catch and shoot threes in this game, including a very big one. So that was the key. It was not just the star shot making from the Mavs. It was the attention that they demanded. And the fact that in the home stretch, after a really rough period, the supporting cast came through. This was an interesting game from Luka, significantly better than game one, especially on the defensive side of the ball, which we'll talk about in a minute. He was still very jump shot reliant in this one, though. And that was one of my frustrations in game one, was him settling. I think especially as those traps started to pick up, Luka just wanted to go to work in single coverage, and he didn't want to get into the mess of it all and have to deal with these second defenders super consistently. And so when he was like, I'm just going to get myself a shot, he was going to that step back. But when it mattered most, he reined him. He didn't have the hottest jump shooting game overall. But when it mattered most, like, he just delivered. He really is one of the most disgusting, difficult shot makers. And you say it, dude, demoralizing is the word. Like, Luka steps back, rains that on you. That has happened to the Clippers so many times, and he's so confident in those shots. So props to the Clippers defense for making these stars work and giving them different coverages and forcing the ball out of their hands. But this is what makes the Mavs so scary. It's when they play hard and then Kyrie and Luka do their thing and the guys around them just play well enough, there's a lot of firepower there from the Stars.
There's a ton of firepower, and that's why you buy into them in these close games. You know, the Mavs, after the PJ Washington and Gafford trade, you know, when they were at full strength, I mean, this was one of the best clutch basketball offenses, point blank period. You know, and when you have that kind of firepower with Luka and Kyrie, it's deadly, man. You know, because it was Luka hit two big pull-up threes and Kyrie hits one, and then you're just sitting there going, I mean, it's not like you can do anything.
They doubled Luka when Kyrie was one pass away. You can't do that.
Yeah, dude, and Luka didn't even see him, man. There was another possession where Luka didn't see him at all too late. And, you know, the Mavs, I thought the Mavs did a much better job in this game specifically of matching up with Big Zoo. I thought that was going to be a key, you know, after last game. It just looked like Zoo is going to be a mismatch problem all series long. And I really enjoyed, Carson, how they got physical with Zoo early. You know, they let him know immediately this is not going to be the same kind of game. And it had ripple effects later in the game where Zoo didn't want to go. Like, there were possessions where he would have a mismatch in the post or have an easy post hook and he second-guessed himself and kicked back out. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, he had easy baby hook looks that he's missing. And I directly correlate that to the Mavs being really physical with them, actively, like, you know, just not letting him have anything easier, get into a rhythm. And I thought that was a huge key. Like, Zoo to me is the kind of guy and has the kind of archetype that can really disrupt Dallas where he can get to his look. I know Kleba matches up with him strength-wise. He can just go over the top of Kleba. Gafford and Lively. Gafford's a little too short and a little too thin to really disrupt him. Lively was the guy with his length that really disrupted Zoo all game long. And like you said, man, the energy, the effort, everything. And that's going to be the recipe for Dallas to win basketball games, man, is keep it close. Play, like you said, man, play well enough in these exterior areas where they can just pull away right there at the end and get their offense going. I also didn't like the Clippers' late game execution. You know, I wanted Kawhi to get a few more touches, and I wonder if he isn't at 100% or wasn't feeling it. You know, I know his jumper wasn't on. He's 0-5 from behind the arc in this game. So, you know, I wonder if you're just riding the hot hand and going, hey, PG, go and find their bucket. I wanted Kawhi to get a few more touches, man, because there were spots late in the fourth or early in the fourth quarter where, you know, Kawhi's just getting it. He's diving through the lane. He's getting to his spot. I thought he should have had a few more touches. But Dallas really course corrected in a lot of different areas. And the final difference to me, too, say what you want, man. Shooting variance is always going to determine a series.
Yeah.
Clippers were cold, man, and the Mavs weren't. Like, the Mavs shoot 14 of 33 from behind the arc. The Clippers shoot 8 of 30. The three-point shot is a, you know, big key for this series, and it is a huge component of both of these teams' offenses. So game to game, it's like sometimes that's going to make the difference. The Mavs made 6 more threes than the Clippers did, and they hit their open looks, and the Clippers didn't. And that's going to be a key for every series. But for the most part, I thought Dallas really corrected on a lot of their mistakes, specifically the matchup with Big Zoo, man. Big Zoo can wreck this series. And I think every single game, Lively, Gafford, Kleba, whoever they're trotting out there has to make life difficult, play him super physical. And they did that tonight, man. I thought that was a huge key to this game.
Absolutely. It's really interesting how little Gafford we've seen ever since he obviously struggled mightily early in game one with Zoo just bullying him out of the post. Like, Lively has been more ready for that matchup because he offers the length. Kleba has been the guy most willing to engage in that physical battle. And I think Kleba has just been really valuable in this series because of his defensive versatility. And when he knocks down a couple spot up threes like he did in this game, then really helps to have that sort of five outlook, especially as you are having your best players trapped quite significantly, like just over and over again. This was a much improved defensive effort from Dallas, really across the board. You mentioned the physicality with Zoo just from the start. You felt a difference there. Overall, it was just a more physical tone that Dallas set in this game defensively. Better job mixing up coverages on the Clippers stars. And Luka was just better defensively in this game. It was a really abysmal effort in game one, and we saw it early. James Harden having Amir Coffee screen for him. And then it's just, all right, let's go to work on Luka. And he was offering no resistance. He was just a nice little runway to the rim. And that was not the case in this game. He gets beat off the bounce a couple times, but I thought held up better, played with much better effort. Both he and Kyrie made a couple valuable plays with just their hands and instincts, which we know is where they are going to have their value as defenders when they're engaged. And it's like you said, the Clippers missed some shots that they would have made in game one, but this was absolutely a significant improvement from a Dallas team defensively that just didn't look ready in game one. And their offense was the bigger issue, but this was definitely a better defensive game from Dallas as well. At the same time, we didn't get the best Kawhi in this game. And that's something that we're going to have to monitor because this is not an insignificant amount of basketball that he's missed. I believe it was their last 8 games of the regular season. And then once you miss a game one, like, you know that that's a real injury. It might just be right knee inflammation, but for Kawhi, like, that's a problem. And it just didn't feel like he had his legs under him in this one. Like, he was able to get to his regular spots. He was able to play with that physicality and pace that makes him so great in these playoff environments, get to mid-range, and then he was just consistently missing short, and that's where I just felt like it doesn't look like maybe he has his normal lift. He just doesn't have the same lethal jump shooting from that range and from beyond the arc right now that we're used to. Like, Kawhi is an unconscious pull-up shooter, and he just wasn't in this one. We have to see more, of course, but you didn't get the Kawhi that you normally expect in these playoff environments, and health 1,000% could be a factor there. Same goes for Harden, although I thought Harden did a really nice job of compensating for the fact that he had an off night from deep because he was just 2 of 10, and he put on that step back clinic in game one and was raining threes. And in this game, he wasn't. He was missing a lot of those similar looks, but he still worked his way to the mid range, which we saw was a key expansion in his postseason arsenal last year. Even though he lacked that rim pressure and rim finishing, he was able to carve his way to the mid range. And even there, he draws some fouls and he got to the line a lot in this game. He takes 9 free throws and consistently made good decisions as a facilitator. So he still had a huge offensive impact on this game, even though his pull-up shooting was off. But this is the challenge with the Clippers. It's when that pull-up shooting is off, like, that is the basis of the offensive arsenal for your 3 best players. And you're able to get Zoo some looks in the dunker spot and dump off to him and whatnot. But, like, ultimately, you lack that sort of consistent rim pressure. And when Luka is so jump shot reliant as he is right now, you can say the same for the Mavs. They just end up being the one who make their shots down the stretch in this one. But we know that he has that physical dimension. He has that ability to just consistently pressure the paint in a way that no Clipper does. And they just kind of went with their jump shots in this game and they weren't falling.
The one encouraging thing I'll say about that is I thought Kawhi was pretty effortlessly able to get to his spots.
He was,
for the most part, in this game. Like, you talk about the physical imposition that Luka has, Kawhi has that too. And for the most part, no matter who they threw at him, he was able to kind of maneuver and get there. The shots weren't falling, you're right. But that's the thing, man. Both of these teams are really jump shot reliant. And considering the deterrence that both these teams have at the rim, nothing is going to come easy there. Like, that one that one finish Paul George had, God, he's so nasty, man. In the fourth, that one where he went under the rim, took that extra step, and then finished on, it's just so nasty. No shots at the rim are going to come easy in this game, and that's why pull-up jump shooting really is important. And jump shooting, period, every game to game is that much more, you know, emphasized because you're just not getting anything easy, you know, at the rim. Kawhi's going to have to be better, point blank. That, you know, the Clippers didn't have, like, a number one guy that really played like that. They have 3 guys who are capable, and you could argue with a great Russell Westbrook turning back the clock, you know, when they need him. They have 4 guys who have that kind of potential. None of those guys performed up to expectation, and so, you know, especially in the fourth quarter. And that's why I thought they could have or should have tried to get the ball to Kawhi a little more. In my opinion, he is just that number one, but Kawhi and Harden were cold. PG wasn't. So I understand why their process turned to that. Their stars just got to be better, man. Bottom line. I thought their role players played all right. I thought Russ did a good job in his energy and effort. While Zoo had an off night, he also had his moments with offensive boards and stuff like that. But for the most part, the Clippers need Kawhi Leonard to be better, to be knocking down his jump shots. And I think they need Zoo to be better. It wasn't a great role player game. You know, Norm Powell, I thought, was off. He's got to be better.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think it's about Kawhi. I think it's about Kawhi's shot falling. And I think you bring a key point up with his legs, man. Even on like that last jumper that he took, Kawhi's online and it looks like it's going to fall. But he's like he's just short. Like it just goes straight off of the front iron. And that's been consistent. Their stars have got to be better, man. Somebody's got to take that lead role. And again, in the fourth quarter, Luka stepped up and wanted to be the best player on the court, and he was. And nobody else really challenged him in that respect. In the Rock fight, Luka emerged victorious, man. He was the best player on the court.
It has been good to see, though, that the Clippers are closer to the team that they were at their best than the team that they were at their worst. Like the level that they're defending at, I mean, Terrence Mann has just been awesome in this series, and you see all the collection of length they have on the perimeter. And Harden has snapped out of just that terrible, terrible funk that he was in. So even with Kawhi not looking like himself, obviously they won game one without him. This is really going to be an awesome series. It does feel like the Clippers have more weapons ultimately, like Tim Hardaway Jr. injured.
Let's do that thought exercise.
Yeah.
How many guys would you take over the Mavs' third player? Like the offensive?
I'm not even viewing it in those terms. I'm just viewing it in terms of like the shooting, like the consistent spot up shooting, the infusion that you get.
I mean, you're
obviously Norman Powell.
You're taking like, Harden. You're more taking dynamic. Powell. You're taking Terrence Mann. Yeah.
Yeah. PJ Washington has the dimension of athleticism though, that is different, but like, I'm just thinking dudes who you create an open shot for them and you trust them to knock it down. And in this game, that wasn't really the case, but LA just has more of those guys. At the same time, Luka is going to be the best player on the floor, and he was the best player on the floor by a good amount in this game. Kyrie has been so exceptional down the stretch. It's going to be a really, really interesting battle. Are there any more key adjustments or factors that you look at that you think could swing this series as we continue to watch this battle play out?
Yeah, I think the one big one is continuing to just divert so much attention to Luka offensively. I mean it. Like, I want the other guys to kill me. I am going to, and you know what? Luka's going to take his step back threes, and you're going to have to live with them. You know, ultimately, he does shoot 5 of 14 from behind the arc. That's something that you need to capitalize on if you're the Clippers. Like, that's a lot of dead possessions. I think that's the right game plan. And Luka's just so hard to defend. You know, we can talk about his skilled shot making and how physical and strong he is. The thing that makes him so hard to guard to me, Carson, is like, the way he changes his mind at the last second, like how there can be 4 seconds on the shot clock. And if that guy in the help side corner moves off a foot, 6 inches off of his guy, even if Luka is midway through his jump shot, he's got the ability to just fire that thing right to the corner or fire it to the wing or get it to the open guy. Like, you really have to defend. It's like Jokic, man. And that's what makes these guys so unstoppable, is it's like, all 24 seconds of the shot clock, they are going to make you defend for all 24. And that's really what makes Luka unstoppable, is he's got to counter to everything, man, because he's such a good shooter, because he's such a good playmaker. He's the second best offensive player in basketball, only second to Jokic, man, in my opinion. And I think the Clippers have the right formula. I would continue doing this every single night, man. I would live and die with his jumpers. I'm not letting him get into the teeth of the defense. I'm not letting him get into the lane. I'm helping off of all the other guys. And if PJ Washington goes off and kills me, so be it, man. That's the way we're going to have to die. I'm certainly not letting Luka and Kyrie kill me, man. I think the Clippers have the right defensive scheme and mindset here.
Agreed. And again, those supporting cast members started knocking down their shots, but there were multiple turnovers out of Luka traps. Like, one time he just can't get that pass out cleanly. Zubats gets a handoff on it. Kleba doesn't make a great decision. If I remember correctly, PJ Washington travels. Like, just make the other guys make the decisions and make the shots. I think ultimately that gives LA the best chance.
There was one possession too, where I think Luka, I mean, this is only one possession, but Luka drives in the right side corner and Kawhi rotates back up and gets an easy steal when they trap him too. Like, he just telegraphed the pass a little too much. I think that's got to be the game plan for LA, man. Anybody but Luka.
Yeah. I am still interested in if we see more Josh Green minutes in this series. he came in, he picked up a few quick fouls in this one, but boy, does he just bring that energy and that athleticism, man. I mean, he picks up 7 boards in the 14 minutes that he's out there. Of course, he doesn't make his 2 spot up jumpers, and that's going to be key in just determining who plays, like who can knock down those spot up jumpers. And that's where, even though I think Derrick Jones Jr. did a lot well in this game in terms of perimeter defense, his activity on the glass, I just worry about a shooter that questionable out there on the floor that consistently. So we'll see. I really view this as a highly competitive series. I picked the Mavs beforehand. I feel good about that. This was a game that they had to steal, but like, these are 2 very evenly matched teams, and it is going to be fun watching this continue to play out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to talk a little T-Wolves Suns, just to give you guys some quick words from DraftKings here. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code NERDS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code NERDS only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my, look at that, he is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Minnesota Timberwolves, Logan, are up 2-0 on the Phoenix Suns. And game one, of course, was electric just because of the Anthony Edwards 18-point third quarter that we got. This game was quite different. Ant only gives you 15 points on 3 of 12 shooting. Karl Anthony Towns only gives you 12, only plays 24 minutes in this game because of foul trouble. And still, it is a double-digit win for the Timberwolves. What do you take away from that?
It's the team. It's the collective. That is why we have emphasized for so long that the Timberwolves are a real threat, man. And they just have so many dependable guys that impact the game in so many ways. They should not withstand a game like this against 3 lights-out pull-up jump shooters, 3 of the best scorers, you know, in the game. You shouldn't. Ant puts up 15, 5, and 8 in this game. Like you mentioned, Cat is in foul trouble early. He had three fouls in the first quarter. He gives you 12, yeah, 8, and 1.
Vintage.
And, dude, the funniest thing, too, man, Cat's over there. I feel for the guy. All he can do is smile. Just smile through the pain, man.
He brought good vibes. He was giggling on the bench and whatnot. But I said beforehand, I think this is going to be a big Cat game. They have nobody who can guard him. He got in foul trouble in game one, so we didn't get to see it fully pan out. But, boy, he was cooking them in single coverage. He was dissecting the doubles. And then he picked up his three quick fouls. And that's the Karl Anthony Towns experience sometimes. He gets in foul trouble quite often.
Don't undersell his absence, though. I mean, that stretch in the second quarter without Ant, without Cat, I mean, it was laborious. And the fact that Mike Conley and Jaden McDaniels were able to carry them through so effectively was amazing. And that's the theme of this game. The fact that Jaden McDaniels stepped up and had, I mean, an awesome game. Mike Conley did so much turning back the clock. Rudy Gobert deserves a ton of credit. I mean, it really is. Shout out Mark Wahlberg. Shout out Will Ferrell, man. It's the other guys, dude. They're doing their thing. Like, this was a great McDaniels game. 25-8-3, 10-17 from the field, and 2-4 from deep. It reminded me of Keegan Murray in the play-in, a guy who's primarily, you know, his role is defense and spot-up shooting. McDaniels was just getting downhill, getting to the rack, consistently getting to the hole. And I want to give Minnesota, on the whole, a ton of credit for consistently getting downhill. Without Karl Anthony Towns on the floor, with an off Anthony Edwards game, with him getting a ton of double teams, this team got to the line a lot, and that was a huge factor. The Suns don't. The Suns settle for a lot of pull-up jump shots, a lot of three-pointers. The Timberwolves consistently got downhill and got a ton of stuff at the line. The couple of plays that really stick out to me about Jaden McDaniels in this game, the offensive rebound and putback in the fourth, some of the late game shot making, obviously, but that grown man bucket he got on KD, where he lowers his shoulder, pushes him all the way to the basket, and just gets an easy layup. I mean, that is a grown man bucket, dude.
You got KD, we got Jaden McDaniels.
We got Jaden McDaniels, man. That age like fine wine. What a bar.
Real.
And credit to him on defense, too, Carson. In this series, the Suns are shooting below 30% when they're guarded by Jaden McDaniels. Mike Conley deserves an immense amount of credit as well in this game. 18-4-4 in these cold stretches, just boom, boom, boom. Hitting big threes, hitting these old crafty man buckets, man.
Oh, yeah.
These mid-range stop and pop floater runners off the glass. Money. And both of these guys, too, did a phenomenal job of setting up Rudy Gobert for easy opportunities, man. Dunk after dunk. And credit for Gobert for continuing to roll hard, for being there in the spot where they needed him to be. They just carried him through this collective defensive. You know, Rudy, throughout this game, was such a huge deterrent, just especially Beal. There were a ton of possessions where Beal would get downhill into the hoop, and then he'd turn around and go, oh, man, I can't put this shot up. Gobert is going to swat me. Everybody, McDaniels, Gobert, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And you know what? The Timberwolves shouldn't have won this game, especially when your best offensive player, like we've emphasized, Anthony Edwards, played so far below expectations. The one thing I'll give Ant credit for, or I'll give him credit for two things. One, his playmaking in this game. Any double he drew, I thought Ant did a phenomenal job of kicking to the weak side corner, kicking to the weak side wing. Those are tough passes for a young guy to make in a spot like this where you're just not expecting those looks. And when they consistently came at him, Ant was finding the open guy. That's a hard role that, I mean, we've seen Embiid struggle with double teams, so much more experience than Ant. Ant did it. And that's the only thing that you can do in those scenarios. You can't force it. You can't get downhill. You're going to get the ball poked loose. You're going to lose it. You're going to commit a turnover. You're going to take a contested jumper. He didn't. He found the open guy consistently. I want to give him credit for that. And I want to give him credit for consistently taking those pull-up jumpers when he felt like he had to. Like, that kid has so much irrational confidence. And you know what? For a guy like Anthony Edwards, I won't even picture it. I won't even characterize it as irrational confidence. It's rational confidence when you're Anthony Edwards. You're just It's that guy, man. And it's
sometimes with the pull-up jumpers, it's a little irrational. What he did in game one was irrational, and it paid off. But
maybe
he's got
a little
magic in him, but you can't always make all your pull-up jumpers when you're one of the least efficient volume pull-up jump shooters in the league.
He didn't, and that's why he missed some of them today. Yeah. But in the big spots, in the clutch moments, he said, hey, KD, I don't care that you're in my mouth. I'm going to rain it. And he did, man. So an uncharacteristic Timberwolves win, but in a lot of ways, the constant things that we bought in on this team reigned supreme. Effort, energy, rebounding, hard-nosed, elite defense, and a deep bench that you just trust in these role players, man. It's an uncharacteristic win in terms of regular NBA wins where you're two of your best offensive players are off. So, I mean, just so much credit to the Timberwolves collective, man. A team win from wire to wire, man. This was the game that, in my opinion, the Suns had to steal, dude, and they just couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, this really is the one to get, right? When Cat and Ant combined for 27, and yet they weren't even close by the end. Like, Minnesota pulled away in this one, and so it's obviously a great win for them just because in playoff environments, when you can win when your best guys are off, like, that is huge. That is going to pull you through some of these really clutch spots. When you can win when things are ugly, period. And Minnesota can win when things are ugly. I don't think there's any doubt that they are well-built to grind out those tough games. And first of all, we have to give props to the collective offensive contributions, as you mentioned, because I thought a lot of guys did really good work there. And that's part of what's so beautiful about this Minnesota team. We saw it in game one, too. They don't have the best half-court offense. They don't have the most dynamic offense, and they don't have close to the best offensive number one in this playoff field. I know everybody loves Ant, but like, there's still just an immaturity there, decision-making, inconsistency compared to some of these elite playmakers, pull-up shooting inconsistency compared to some of the guys who are elite there. But what they have is a depth of guys who you trust not just to knock down their spot-up jumpers, but who can also put the ball on the floor, who can make capable decisions, and that's where you get just huge performances from Jaden McDaniels and Mike Conley and NAW. And you mentioned Ant's decision-making. Like, I thought this is a really tough matchup for him. And I think this is going to continue to be the game plan against Ant. It's to be force him to beat you with his passing and bait him into these pull-up jumpers, because he's just not wired to pass out of those doubles every single time. But if you're just loaded up, right, ready to help immediately on every drive, then he's going to settle for those pull-up jumpers. And that's ultimately what it is. Game one was awesome, but it is settling. And so that's why I didn't view that as like a super sustainable route for Ant to have a really good series here. But he made good passes for the most part out of doubles in this game. And it was a mixed bag, I guess I would say. There's a couple spots where he over dribbles. He does force the issue as a pull-up shooter, but also just putting the defense in rotation, right? Swing pass, and then you trust the guys around him to make that extra swing pass, and then it's boom. You're attacking with an advantage. Like, the Suns can't rotate that quickly, and Jaden McDaniels was awesome. It was super impressive how much of this was not just about spot-up shooting, as you mentioned, how much of it was attacking closeouts, even just flat-out getting himself a bucket at a couple points. Conley is so valuable, not just because he's an elite spot-up shooter, but because he is such a good decision maker, because he can just control the pace of a game in a stretch, get you good looks out of pick and roll, get to his floater, feed the big man off the roll. They just have a lot of good basketball players, man, a lot of good basketball players, and that's how you win a game like this. Also, though, what stands out more to me even than like the collective role player offensive contributions is just how exceptional this defense is. This, Logan, is not to me even like just average best defense in the league. This is like the kind of defense that comes around once every few years, man. Like, this is an exceptional collection of defenders here. This is a Suns team that may have some flaws offensively, and we'll get to that, but ultimately, like, just has dudes who in single coverage are supposed to give you buckets. Like, they're such great shot makers. And Minnesota is consistently across the board holding up in single coverage on these dudes. It's so impressive. Jaden McDaniels, we know, is all defense, should be all defense, one of the best perimeter defenders on the planet. But his screen navigation here, his length is just absurd. He is constantly on top of you. NAW gives you 31 awesome minutes, and that's what we saw in game one, too. Like, I can talk about how Cat has an opportunity to go crazy offensively in this series.
They're surviving stretches without him because they have so many good wings, so many good perimeter defenders, so many capable shot makers and ball handlers offensively. NAW is one of those key dudes who's just awesome defensively. The collective length they have makes just finishing around the rim so, so difficult. And they're playing physical with these guys on the perimeter. And these are ultimately skilled shot makers, tough shot makers, but not high-end athletes and not dudes who are specifically built for these physical environments that they're having to deal with. So it's just such an impressive collective defensive effort. And Rudy Gobert, of course, is the crown jewel of this defense, and he's the defensive player of the year, and deservedly so. And I hope everybody's taking note. I hope the people who have this vision of him, like I said last week or whatever, that he's Brook Lopez, right? That he's immobile, that he can only sit and drop. And in the playoffs, he just gets exploited because it's, oh, you just pull him out into space and he can't do anything. He falls over himself. Gobert is balling out in this series. He's balling out offensively. He's been aggressive as a finisher. He even went at KD on a mismatch in this game, which I love to see. That's an area that he's really improved this year compared to his Utah years. But it's the switchability, man. It's his ability to cover anybody, which is ironically the thing that has been maligned about Rudy over the years, this perception that he can't guard in space. He has given these dudes trouble with his length. And by the way, Naz Reid and Kat are holding up in space against these dudes too, which maybe isn't the best look for the Suns offense. Like, those dudes are playing hard. They have the length to bother you, but they just can't really get a step on any of these guys. But Rudy's hands were so important in this game, like just getting into passing lanes. He has a few steals. And then it's the full-time deterrence. Like, that's the problem for this Suns offense, man. As great as their shot makers are, they're not high-volume pull-up three-point shooters. They're not beating their man off the bounce consistently to put this defense in rotation and create really good catch-and-shoot looks for their teammates from deep. And then they're also not pressuring and scoring around the rim, partly because they can't get by dudes, partly because Rudy Gobert is down there. So there's no easy offense for this team that's entire identity is predicated on, we're just going to give you buckets. We just put a bunch of tough buckets together and you're going to have to deal with it. They're not doing that. And so then they're getting bodied in the physicality aspects of the game and the size and just the clear advantage that the Timberwolves have in terms of quality basketball players is winning out so convincingly. I picked the Timberwolves to win this series, as did you. But I expected more from the Suns' offense. As much as I love Minnesota's defense, I just thought, man, those big-time shot makers are going to give you more than they have given you here. This has been really, really bad from Phoenix.
I mean, it's been disgusting. And the Phoenix Suns shoot themselves in the foot in this game. They lose the turnover battle 19-13. They get beat 31-2 in points off turnovers. I thought all of the big three was pretty disappointing today. Specifically, you know, I thought the worst was Devin Booker. All of Twitter was talking about his hands and his handle and just his inability to hold on to the rock, man. But nothing has been easy. And for the Suns to steal a game, it's like these guys are going to need to combine for somewhere between 75 and 90 points a game. And it's all going to have to be on lights out pull-up jump shooting. So you're going to have to ask KD, Book, and Beal to just never miss. And, I mean, that's the idea. Like, Minnesota wins out in basically every other category. And it's been a disappointing first two games. And this one, Carson, D-Book, KD, and Beal combined for 52 points on 18 of 45 shooting. That's 40% from the field and 3 of 12 from behind the arc. That's 25%. Of the Suns' 19 turnovers, they also combined for 12 of them. So, I mean, just an abysmal game from the big three that you can't have. And I think somebody in our comment section brings up a very interesting point. To me, the Suns do need a point guard. It's like I've been saying this all year long with their process and their execution. There's no order to the Suns. Yeah. And, like, you just notice this with these other teams. And that's why I think maybe it's going to take another year of Phoenix just playing together to build this chemistry and this rhythm and this – hierarchy. When Anthony Edwards is on the floor, what do the Timberwolves do? They get him the ball. He's their lead guy. And then they let Ant dictate. You know, with these other great teams, it's like for the Clippers, who's hot? We're going to get PG the ball. He's our guy. With the Mavericks, Luka's our guy. We're going to get him the ball. And with the Suns, it's this. All right, it's KD's possession. All right, it's Book's possession. All right, it's Beal's possession. And in some of these scenarios, these guys don't have the skill sets to deal with what they need, like a real point guard. Like, the Timberwolves have Mike Conley, And Mike Conley is going to control the game when I need him to control the game. He's going to strangle the pace and slow it down. He's going to methodically work the ball when we need to it. And honestly, Carson, this might sound crazy. You is our basketball authority on the internet here. I need your opinion. Dude, I think the Suns' best offense comes when they let Grayson Allen touch the ball first. And they let Allen dictate. And most of the time, he's just kicking it to a star and then getting out of the way. But what that does is it just adds one more action to this. It's layering the offense. It's not just, hey, KD, isolation possession. And to KD's credit, I think for the most part, I'll give a ton of credit to McDaniels and this crew for making life hard on him. KD, for the most part, has been able to get to his spots. Has his shot been falling? No. But he's been able to, most part, get to his spots. But what I'm saying is when you layer it with these actions, you're just making the defense think one more step. And yeah. I think one little thing like that just may open up everything. Like when they let Allen gets some one of the Suns' best role players all season long. He gets 17 minutes in this one. The one possession where they let him do that, he kicks it to Beal. The two guys drop with Allen, and he gets a wide open jumper. Like, I don't know, man. There's something that, and that's why I never picked the Suns to go far in these playoffs. There was something about their process and their track record this regular season that I couldn't buy into this overwhelming talent. You know, consistent turnovers, consistent meltdowns in the fourth quarter, consistent faltering in the clutch. And there is just a bad process with the Suns, man. They can have the talent, but there's just not a continuity, a chemistry. This team doesn't know how to play with each other. And I think it is a roster construction issue and how these guys mend together, but it's also a operating issue and chemistry issue. It's kind of everything, man. And I hope this is the lesson. Carson, we've been harping on this all year long. I hope this is the lesson to general managers. If you have not learned by now, just going out and getting three bucket getters and getting three guys who are aesthetically pleasing and ice cold, it's not going to work, man. You need to build a team. A better team is going to win out. And again, I'm not selling my stock on the Suns. I am really hopeful that next year.
Well, you didn't have that much, to be fair.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
In either of our top 10 contender rankings before the playoffs.
I had dumped most of it. I am hopeful that another year with this team just playing a regular season together, much like the Timberwolves did in this regular season. Granted, I think their roster construction is just better. I am optimistic that a full offseason of rebuilding, a free agency, of retooling, and another year of these guys all playing together can make them a better team. But I'm fully out on Phoenix and their recipe, man.
They're playing pickup out there, dude. And Grayson Allen, you mentioned, like, once he goes down with this ankle thing, which doesn't seem great, like, the lack of quality basketball players on this team is just so, so glaring. And then you're asking the big three to all play 40-plus minutes. It's just totally unsustainable. It is a roster composition issue. And the reason that I haven't just absolutely shredded the Suns for that, and I've consistently tried to make this point, is the Suns' title window should have closed after the 2022 season, because CP3 just regressed to the point last year where it was like, oh, they went from real contender to, like, super average playoff team. And then you make the move for KD, which is great. You have to give up valuable assets to do that with Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and whatnot. But we shouldn't have assumed, like, oh, this is going to make them contenders, because they were coming from a really just, like, slightly above average place. And then Bradley Beal, it's like, if you could add a player of that talent level, would the skill set that I chose be another guy who, yeah, can play without the ball and has a little bit more quickness, but, like, primarily is an on-ball, tough bucket getter, not great playmaker, solid there, just like my two best players? No, but they were dealing with a bad situation. Like, CP3 was not a good asset at that point. So that's where it gets complicated. This was a sinking ship. Now, maybe they would have just been better off saying, okay, so that window is over. Now we build towards the Book, McCall, Cam Johnson window, right? Depends on how highly you think of those guys. They would absolutely need another real star-level guy in there if they wanted to make noise. But maybe that was what they should have done. But to me, it's like the Beal thing. At that point, you're just dealing with a tough situation, trying to make the most out of it, and it's a value proposition.
I'm glad you make that point, Carson, because I do repeatedly harp on this on that show. But in the Suns' individual situation, when we're just looking at Phoenix, I think they were handicapped because they had already made the KD trade. I think you're right. Like, if you can go back and not do the KD trade, that's probably the one that you redo because – and I really wonder if you do it again, man. And this isn't a knock on KD and what he brings, but, again, just what he handcuffed you to do. Your salary cap is going to be tied up into three guys because, if you remember, $30 million for Book, $30-plus million for KD, and you were paying Chris Paul $30 million. And so you had to swap him for another contract that met his, which means you're going to be tied up in three $30 million guys regardless, when maybe it makes sense to just have that kind of depth and have a roster that just fits a little better.
You weren't going to get two great 3-and-D wings. You weren't going to get two good 3-and-D wings for Chris Paul. You were going to get another big contract that another team is trying to get off of. And Bradley Beal was not a bad option considering that context, but that's not a way to build a great basketball team. And I think you hit on a great point just with like the directionlessness here. It's so glaring. It feels like they're playing pickup basketball, dude. It is so drastically different than what we see from like the standard for NBA offense today, which is the Denver Nuggets. When you just think about how much set offense they run, like they have great personnel, but they are constantly running designed actions. And within those actions, they have so many counters baked in and there is so much intelligent off-ball movement, right? Defenses are, as you say, just constantly having to think and stay dialed in. And on top of that, they have the direction. They have the hierarchy. They have clear priorities at various stages of the game. Phoenix, it's literally just, oh, KD, would you like to take a mid-range pull-up? Yes, Book, I'd love to. Would you like to take a mid-range pull-up? Oh, Brad, would you like to get it on the fun? Like, it's unserious. It's not a way to build a great basketball team, no matter who the names are. And that's what we've seen. This team wasn't that good in the regular season. And I always had a little bit of pause, totally counting them out because of what we know Book and KD especially are capable of just with nuclear shot making, but they have come up against a team that is just way better, man. That is kicking their ass in a lot of the key categories in playoff basketball, defense and depth. It is glaring. And Book is playing at like a shocking level, dude. Like just two awful games. Legitimately, I had to wonder if he had perhaps lubricated his hand before the game. Like that was such awful ball security. It's a little reminiscent of like when CP3 was playing through the hand issue a couple years ago when the Suns were making their deep playoff run. I think it was in 2021 when they went to the finals. And he's just like clearly having some issues with ball security. I don't know what's up with Book, but his shot making is off. His ball handling is atrocious. And this is a tough matchup on top of that. So it's just so many tough pull-up jumpers, man. Like that's really all there is to it. And you go down Grayson Allen, it's over. Like you just don't have good basketball players on top of these guys who have redundant skill sets and aren't able to carry the defensive load that you need them to and aren't built for the physicality of this moment.
And the one final aspect I want to hit on with this team and their roster construction fundamentally and why it doesn't work too, it takes that much more time to get everybody in rhythm because there's not enough ball to go around. Like at the start of this game, KD, Beal, and Book are all getting to their spots. You know, getting to where they wanted to go on the court was not an issue. They all got to their bread and butter looks. Well, except for Beal. Beal was kind of like just legitimately off, like blew a dunk, fell down one. He had a bad start. But that's my point is like for all of these guys, you want to get to your shots early. You want to get them falling. When there's another guy that you got to feed and get looks to, it's like if your shot isn't falling too, that's that much more longer that you have to wait to get your look and to get dialed in. And Beal didn't get dialed until the second quarter. Book didn't get dialed until the second quarter. KD had it going for a little bit and then got cold. It's just flawed, man. It's just flawed. And let me ask you one final question. I'm not ready to stick a fork in Phoenix, and maybe we'll revisit this conversation when Phoenix is actually eliminated. Would you shop any of these guys like in this regular, you know, in this offseason if you could?
I just think it's tough, man. I don't know that you're looking at a really hot market out there for like a Bradley Beal, for example, but they're not in a good direction. Like they're not close to contention, in my opinion. And they have so much cap tied up in these guys that they don't really have certainly the assets and they don't have the cap flexibility to make a bunch of great moves on the margins. Like we praised what they did in the offseason, because they were working with nothing. They were working with no picks and no caps. Like, it's really, really hard to build out a good playoff roster like that. And this was always my thing, man. Phoenix can be a good offense. They're going to be an average defense. And in playoff environments, that means that basically everybody else is defending at a higher level than you. But even offensively, where they have this phenomenal skill and tough shot making, if you're not getting high volume threes and you're not getting high volume looks at the rim and you don't have a single great playmaker, like, you're just not going to be a great playoff offense. You can be a good one. You're not going to be a great one. And Phoenix needed to be a great one. So I don't feel good about the state of this team. I'm not going to discount the fact that they could win a game. Maybe they even hold serve in Phoenix. Teams are winning at home very consistently in these playoffs. I wouldn't bet on it. I think they are just completely outclassed right now. I think Book will play better, but I don't know. I thought he would play better after game one, and then he didn't really. Minnesota's just much better. I'd be really quite surprised if they didn't hold on to win this series. And I'm excited to watch them do battle with Denver, man. Like, this is a really, really good team, and it's a very unique counter to Denver in how huge they are, how well they defend them. It's going to come down to, can they produce good enough offense in the half court to hang with Denver? And that's where Ant's really going to be tested, because, again, this is going to be the game plan for Ant. He is going to keep seeing doubles consistently. He is going to keep have teams testing his pull-up shooting. Game one, pull-up shooting was there. Game two, it was not. And that will be a key determining factor for the ceiling that this Minnesota team can ultimately reach. But really good win for them, all things considered.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Talk about the last game of the night here, Logan. Let's take a trip out east. Pacers Bucks. Game one here, much like what we saw in Mavs Clippers, star player out for the home team, and they deliver an ass kicking nonetheless. Giannis still out in this one, but the Pacers come back, pick up a nice win on the road. What did you take away from this one?
I mean, Pascal Siakam was just the best player on the court tonight, man. And I was really impressed with Indiana's ability to get Milwaukee in transition and out and running. Like, that to me is the recipe for Indiana winning games in this series, man. And that's how they won in the regular season. Turn this thing to a track meet and let the old dogs get tired in Milwaukee, man. Like, I'm trying to run Milwaukee to death every single series. And the thing with Milwaukee, too, is they have a significant lack of an interior play finisher, bucket getter.
Oh, yeah.
There's really nobody, you know, they can really swing the game on the inside. And that's an advantage that without Giannis on the floor, Indiana has in Pascal Siakam. They beat Milwaukee in points in the paint, 52-36. They outrun them 14-5 in fast break points. And Siakam just kept getting downhill, man. I think I underrated how important of a trade deadline acquisition Pascal Siakam
fantastic
was
move
for this team in terms of a guy that just complements Tyrese Haliburton so well, a secondary ball handler, a guy who can legitimately create his own shot, a guy who you can run high volume pick and roll as a roller, as a popper, a guy that he's just so versatile, a guy that you can throw the ball to on the low block and go get a shot. Like, Siakam just works here. And in a playoff setting, he's just valuable to have, man, because of his experience, because of this baseline that he just brings. I mean, he has been balling out in this series. And again,
oh yeah,
I think we're probably going to see Siakam take a little bit of a step back when Giannis gets healthy. But the Bucks have really had no answer for him thus far in this series. In the first game, 36-13-2. In this one, 37 points, 11 boards, and 6 assists on 16-23 from the field and 3-4 from behind the arc. Carson, he's got 18 points in the paint in this game. That's half of what Milwaukee was able to muster on the night. Like,
yeah,
just consistently getting downhill, generating good looks, drawing free throws. And because of this, it opened up the outside game for Indiana, man. Indiana shoots 8-38 in game one. They shoot 16-36 from behind the arc in game two, man. And the Bucks just can't slow anybody down. It was really important. Milwaukee did the tough thing. Milwaukee won a game without Giannis. They handled the hard part. You had to stave them off, right? You couldn't give Indiana the crazy lead. And so luckily for Milwaukee, they did their job. Now you're just sitting here, fingers crossed, that Giannis is going to come back at close to 100%, that he's going to be ready to go and to give you 30 to 40 minutes, and is going to be really impactful on both sides of the ball. But I think Indiana's got a really good formula, man. I think they're deeper than Milwaukee. They just have more guys that I like. I think they have way more offensive weapons that really swing a game. And they've got a key, man. That key is getting this old Bucks team out in transition and running them and working them and keeping the tempo up, man. I think they got a lot of guys that can really abuse that formula. But big props to Pascal Siakam. I think through two games, he has unequivocally been the best player on the court in this series, man, and has been the reason they're up. There are other things on the margins that I think Indiana did really well. I think Haliburton was better. You know, Turner shot the ball better. You got good Nembhard minutes. Like, there were other things on the margin, but running this Pacers train, leading the pack, is Pascal Siakam, man. He's been balling out.
Yeah, you talk about him being the best player in this series. Dame has been really, really good, too. I think those two have basically been going toe-to-toe, both balling out. But this is why you made the Siakam trade, man, and I loved that move. And I think there's a lot of teams that are probably kicking themselves passing up on opportunities over the last 2 years. Golden State, we know that Dallas was strongly rumored for a time. Like, this is a dude who basically every team can use, a big mismatch attacking forward who can run inverted pick and roll for you, who can finish as a roller, who has been incredibly effective as a mid-range shooter in this series, who even in this game is knocking down his pick and pop threes and his spot up looks, one of the best transition scorers in basketball. Like, a man who can impose himself physically and athletically like that, but then also deliver the touch shot making and the decision making and do it in so many different ways. Really, really valuable in a playoff environment like this, especially when Hallie is still being passive. This man was just sealing off every mismatch that he could. And you gave him a cross match in transition. He was going to get a bucket on that little guy. And he was shooting over the top of everybody. Like, this is the thing. Milwaukee's defense is not good, man. And they did not defend well in game one. Indiana missed a lot of open threes in game one. A ridiculous amount of open threes. In fact, I have this stat here. Shout out Hoop Venue tweeted this out. They shot 6 of 31 on wide open threes in game one. Like, it was an exceptionally rough shooting performance for them, considering the quality of looks that they got. That shooting came through in this one. Miles Turner was significantly better, right? Just the entire supporting cast was much better. But Siakam is the guy who is just consistently creating great offense for himself and others. Because, I mean, he's only going to be able to go at Dame out of the post so many times before Dame starts just gambling, right? Just starts taking risks, trying to poke the ball out. And that happens in this one. And then Siakam stays composed, kicks out to Miles Turner for a wide open three. It was fantastic from him. They played fast, as you mentioned, which is a key. Like, This is the ultimate pace and space offense, man. And that was another reason Siakam is the perfect pairing for Tyrese Halliburton, because this team needed that dimension of interior finishing and physical imposition. Hallie is so much a skill-based player, right? The pull-up shooting, the decision-making as a passer. What they didn't have was that consistent interior big forward. That's what Siakam is. But then he can also play with and without the ball, and he plays with pace really well, which is exactly what Indiana wants. Like, he's just such a great fit. He's been so efficient, so productive since joining Indiana, and really awesome to see him playing at this level. The Bucks ultimately cannot stop them, and they're not going to be able to stop them, certainly without Giannis on the floor. Like, we've seen the different matchups they try with Siakam. Brook is just too slow. Everybody else is basically too small to offer real resistance. Giannis will be the best counter to him, but right now you're just taking care of business. You're trying to win this game without Giannis out there, and Indiana did that, and that's a win for them, obviously. I also thought Hallie made the right decisions in this game. He mostly made the right decisions in the last game. He's still mostly passing out of these looks pretty quickly in pick and roll, very actively trying to create looks for shooters. He was a little more aggressive in this game, though. What did he go from 7 shot attempts to 10? Good for you, Hallie. That's a little bit better. And still gets things going in transition. Like, even when he's not asserting himself as a scorer, he's a really valuable offensive player. And he's still a threat with the pull-up shooting. And like, you'll see the Bucks still blitz him, and they still don't want Brook dealing with him in drop. I just want a little bit more out of him. I want a good bit more out of him, actually, because we just know how special he can be. And I get that he's been a different player post-hamstring, but a little more than this, at the very least, Hallie would be nice to see. Andrew Nembhard, you mentioned, I've always been a fan of his. He stepped up. Like, it was just so much better from Indiana across the board offensively, because that's always how they were going to win this series. They don't get stops, really. They're never really going to get stops, but it was an uncharacteristically poor finishing performance from them in game one and an overly passive Hallie performance. For the Bucks, like, they still had a fine offensive game, but this was my vision beforehand. It's like, Indiana is going to be the team to get the easy shots, right? They have the best athlete on the floor. They have a lethal pull-up shooter, and then they just have shooting all around, and they play fast, and that's where you get easy looks out in transition. Milwaukee, it's not that they don't have good shot makers. We saw that in game one. Bobby Portis can just shoot over the top of people. Chris Middleton can just shoot over the top of people. Obviously, Dame can go nuclear and has been really good over the first two games offensively, but it is a lot of just jump shooting. And in the case of Portis and Middleton, it's a lot of twos specifically, mid-range to long twos, and that's just not a great offensive diet. You mentioned the lack of, like, any sort of rim finishing. It is a very different dynamic. Brooke Lopez, as we know, just isn't a threat as a roller. He's so old. And Middleton, Bobby Portis, right? None of these guys are getting downhill, and that's the limitation of this Milwaukee offense without Giannis. But Dame is balling. Like, he's putting on that vintage Dame high pick and roll clinic. You set me a screen at the logo, I'm pulling from 27, and I am just banging those threes over and over. And he was active off ball in this game. So the key takeaway to me, really, for Milwaukee is, okay, you split the non-Giannis games, even though you give one up at home. I think that's probably a win overall, because Indiana is better than you when Giannis isn't on the floor. And Dame playing like this makes you the second-best team out East. Like, this is a lethal offensive player. This is one of the better half-court shot creators, one of the better half-court offensive engines in the game. That's what you need if you want to make noise. I'm not saying we're going to continue to see this Dame. This is a defense that offers very little resistance. But seeing him mostly replicate that game one performance, at the very least, was encouraging.
The only thing that's been discouraging, and I'm not going to hold anything against him from game one in the second half, because that game was over. Anybody who was watching that knew that he didn't need to score in the second half. I worry about this burden and just Lillard being able to exert himself into the third and the fourth quarter. I thought it was kind of evident in this one, and not the fact that he wasn't getting to his looks. Like, Lillard was turning the corner and getting downhill in the fourth quarter, but, you know, he makes his last field goal with 3 minutes left in the third quarter, and he just really struggled to finish through contact late. And, you know, another shooter, Brook Lopez, knocks down 6 of his threes in this game. Shout out, man. But again, they're so limited and predictable without Giannis, where...
And old.
Yeah, and old. Like,
and slow.
It's just an uphill battle for Milwaukee, especially without Giannis. And Dame, Carson, I know that we did this list a long time ago and he was on your list. I think, I can't remember if he was on mine. Dame is just one of the greatest shooters ever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is some of the, bro, the corner fading three, hit left for a right-hander, I love that shot. I'm left-handed, man. I love shooting a fading left, like, a corner three. Mm-hmm. That's an awesome one. Because you can just kind of line it up with the backboard and you're not putting much on it. He's doing that right-handed fading all the way out of bounds. The way he can just explode out of that first dribble and then immediately slam on the brakes and hit those threes. Dame is just one of the greatest shooters of all time, and it is encouraging. That's the one thing about these first two games. Giannis may not be out there, but they have allowed Dame to take so many shots that he is just in one of those rhythms where I can imagine next game he comes out and he is just nails out of the gate. And when Giannis comes back, you know, you have unlocked this version of Dame, hopefully, for the rest of the playoffs when Giannis does come back. And Giannis's game is that of, you know, he doesn't need to play back into, you know, his isn't a skill, a shot making, you know, it's just, right. It's bully ball. So that's the Dame thing is very encouraging. So I'm not ready to sell stock. The Pacers do look like the better team through two games without Giannis. And I think they can make life hard on Milwaukee in a 7-game series. I'm going to stick to my guns, but Milwaukee needs Giannis desperately, man. Without Giannis, and without Giannis playing at a very high level, I think Indiana probably still has a skill advantage here. I've been really disappointed with Milwaukee's defense. We knew it was bad. Man, dude, they just have nobody. They have nobody who can go out here and get stops, man. I don't think Rick Carlisle would date the Bucks either, man.
No, he would not. He would not. There is some poor defense being played in this series, but Indiana is the much better offensive team when they're going, and this is going to come down to when Giannis can come back. Like, now that you've lost a game at home, do you start to push the timeline here? Because you won game one without him. Like, obviously, that is a big success. Now you go to Indiana without Giannis. I don't like your chances there. So that is ultimately going to be the key factor in this series. When do we see Giannis? What version of Giannis do we see? But I agree. Like, getting Dame in this rhythm, and maybe this doesn't happen without with Giannis on the floor. Like, I don't know, maybe just not giving Dame the reins to this extent. He doesn't establish this sort of rhythm. But ultimately, I think there's going to be a couple keys for Dame. Number one, how consistently can he get a step? How does he finish around the rim? Because the pull-up shooting, although it was less efficient this year than in years past, like, we know that he's special there. And also, that becomes more dynamic when there is the threat of him getting downhill on you, and it's not the same predictable actions over and over again. Oh, Dame pick and pop. We know that one of these guys is going to shoot a three. It's not all that difficult to guard. He's had a bit of that downhill element going, and it's just made him great all around. And then also, like, do they figure out the two-man game with him and Giannis? I don't expect them to get it all going at this point. That would be crazy. But, like, can they get more out of it than they have up to this point? Can they establish more of a chemistry between those two? If that happened, then the Bucks would be a different team. They would be closer to the team that we visualized preseason. I'm not ready to wipe away all the concerning stuff that we've seen. And obviously, like, this is a game that they lost convincingly. But just seeing this version of Dame is a good thing. Indiana's tough to stop, though. And Indiana's really tough to stop if you don't have Giannis out there. Any final thoughts, Logan, before we get out of here?
Naz Reid
played today. Naz Reid wasn't that great today. Unfortunately, didn't have his signature moments, didn't have a sick in and out dribble, didn't have a sick three, didn't have a sick dunk.
I mean, I'm just going to have to do, he's still Naz Reid though.
He's still Naz Reid. He defended fine. I thought he defended pretty well in space in this game. So there's your Naz Reid moment of the day. Appreciate you guys. As always, if you want more Nerd Sesh content, we are going live throughout these playoffs. And of course you can watch all these shows after the fact. We are going to take tomorrow night off just because it's a lighter night of action, but then we will be back on Thursday after Lakers Nuggets and talking all the games that we see. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm just loving playoff basketball, Logan. I know you feel the same. If you want to listen to the show, you can do so across all audio platforms. Also here on our YouTube channel, we have some in-depth video content beyond just what we're doing on the show. I put out a video today about the Nuggets comeback against the Lakers. all of the key factors that went into that, the adjustments, Jamal and Jokic stepping up in their respective ways, want to keep doing stuff like that. I think I might do a spicy pee video, Logan. Maybe that's my next one. Like, good God, that man is just balling out. It's fun to see. So stay tuned in for all that stuff. Follow us across social if you want to see our trivia content, TikTok and Instagram at Nerd Sesh, Twitter at Nerd _ Sesh. Buy that hat right off Logan's head at thevolume.com. Join our Discord if you want to talk with the fellas and Matthew Sponauer. The link to that is at the link tree across our social media bio. And with that, as always, I've been Carson Brabber.
I have been Logan Camden.
And this was Nerd Sesh.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.